I don't have a source sheet because I could not find the book that had the source I wanted to discuss. But you'll trust me that the author writes what he says, and you're always welcome to go and to explore more on who we learn about. We are all familiar with the fight between Yaakov and Saro Sha'is of the Malach. And there are a lot of different midrashim that describe what image did Yaakov perceive the Malach as. How did the Malach appear to Yaakov during their entanglement and during their fight? So one opinion in the Midrash says that he looks like a robber. He looks like someone who would take your money by the side of the road. A gangster, whoever you think looks like me and someone that you would cross the other side of the street if they were coming down the road at night. So that's what he looked like to Yaakov. The second opinion says, in the Medrash Rabbah, that he looked like a businessman. He looked like someone who was involved in sales and commerce, and he appeared in that image to Yaakov as well. But there is a very odd Gemara in Maseches Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Sadi Aleph discusses a lot of the Midrashim that we know when it relates to Yaakov and the Saro Shel Esav. And the Gemara says that he looked like a Talmud Chacham. Nidmelo k'Talmud Chacham. That he appeared to Yaakov like a Torah scholar while they were wrestling. The idea we see from the different midrashim is that the Yetzer Hara, which we know the Yetzer Hara is the same as the Satan, the same as Esav, they all represent different aspects of pretty much the same thing, is that the Yetzer Hara can appear to us in different forms. It can come under different guise, it can come in a different costume, it can appear to us to take us in dangerous directions because of the way that it manifests itself in our life. So I think we can understand the first two, right? The Yetzer Hara can appear like a mafia hitman, like a thug, simply directing us to sin, forcing us, overpowering us at gunpoint, telling us you have to do this, we lose control, we do something we didn't expect to do, and he simply and directly tells us to do what you know is wrong, and he infects our hearts with a desire to damage, to hurt, like a thug who'd want to force us to do the wrong thing. That's one image of the Yetzer Hara. I think the image of the businessman we can also understand as well. It can appear as an executive, a CEO, someone who's very prominent in the community, wearing a nice suit, driving a fancy car. He doesn't come forcefully and push us towards self-destruction, but he drowns us with the waters of Parnassa, money, stuff, appearances, keeping up. He looks like an accomplished person. The Yetzer Hara in his nice suit, matching socks, nice hat, new kitchen, speaks to us about practicalities, realities. How are you going to support yourself? How are you going to make sure you get ahead in the world? How could this person say this thing about you? What about your kavod? What about your standing in the community? And the Yetzer Hara can reel us in looking like a businessman, looking like a well-together, put-together, accomplished individual. You work so hard, you need to sleep late, you have to spend the evenings relaxing, you shouldn't go to learn, you put in so much time, you have to put money away. All of these things, the Yetzer Hara tries to pull us away from what's important. You're so stressed out. Take, seconds at the meal, thirds at the meal, fourths at the meal. You had a hard week. You need to have dessert on top of desserts. And it keeps on pulling at us with all the things that, well, you're in the business world. You have what to do. You have to accomplish. You have important things as well. I heard someone showed me a clip of an interview from Chaim David Zwiebel, who's the CEO of the Agudas Yisrael. So he told the story that when he was walking home from Yom Kippur one year with one of his children, and he asked to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he asked one of his children, one of his boys, when they were little, what did you daven for? So the boy said, first I davened that Mashiach should come, okay? And then he said, I davened that your office that you work in, where he was a very accomplished lawyer, should burn down. So he said, what's going on? His son hated that his father was away all the time. His father was at work all the time. So he davened to Hashem that his office should burn down. And then Rabbi Zwiebel, he switched course directions and he took a different job, went to work for the Agudas Yisrael, got involved in klal work, and he said that the job was taking away. But we say this all the time. I can't be with my kids. I can't be at the home. I have to do this because I have to work. I have to accomplish. I have to do. I have to make money. I have to be there. Things are going to fall apart if I'm not in the office. And that's the Yetzer Hara reeling us in looking like a businessman. But I think we can all agree that perhaps the most difficult image to understand as a reflection of Yetzer Hara is that of a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar. What is the Gemara telling us that the Yetzer Hara manifests itself, dresses up like a Mora, a Talmud Chacham, a seminary teacher, whoever it is, whoever you view to be your paradigm of a teacher of Torah? The Yetzer Hara comes in such a disguise. It's a very interesting approach. So I want to share with you a point, a nakuda, that I read in one of the works of Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz. Rabbi Steinsaltz, one of the great Torah thinkers of the last century. His accomplishments, each one of his accomplishments, could put him on the map of an important Torah figure. He single-handedly translated and wrote a commentary on all of Shas in Hebrew, which was eventually in the process of being translated into English by Koren as well. He wrote incredible works of Chassidus on commentaries. He was a Chassid of the Lubavitcher Rebbe on Chassidus, on Chabad, on the Tanya, on Jewish thought, giving access to people who did not have access to Torah beforehand, giving introductions to Chumash and Hashkaf and philosophy and learning all different types of things. Really an incredible powerhouse of Torah production was Rabbi Steinsaltz. So one of a number of his essays, he repeats the following theme. And he says that the image of the Yetzer Hara, that of the Tzaddik and the Talmid Chacham, is that for many people who spent their times in Torah atmospheres, in yeshivas, in seminaries, learning, imbibing Torah, spending time in Eretz Yisrael, we all have high points where we were striving and pushing ourselves in Avodas Hashem. We had an image of what we want to be, what we want to accomplish, how we're supposed to look if we're going to be successful in our Ruchnius. Our davening was on fire, and we were motivated, and we were learning, we were going to Shirim, we were filling up notebooks, we were doing everything we were supposed to do, and learning the right way, as things should be. And the Yetzer Hara dresses like a Rosh Yeshiva, dresses like a teacher, and comes to us and says, well, what happened to you? When you were in seminary, when you were in yeshiva, so you davened like this. You're davening, it's not the way it was. And when you were able to go to have intellectual discussions and talk about Torah and Musar and ethics and Hashkafa, that's the way you were when you were in seminary. That's the way you were when you were in yeshiva. That's the image you were supposed to be. But now look at you. You're not even doing that anymore. You've fallen. You're all that high level you kept up when you were in Eretz Yisrael. You're not like that anymore. So, like, what are you even trying for? What's the point? Try to go back to the way you were in high school. Go back to your laurels and rest on those things, because that was fine. But you're not going to be that high level that you thought you were going to be. And you're not going to attain that position of ruchnius that you thought you were going to maintain. You used to learn, go to shirim, chavrusas, and now you try and pretend. You're a faker. You're not really what you accomplished in Eretz Yisrael. It was just a pretend. You pretended for a couple of years that you were really, really religious and you accomplished all these things, but now it's time to sink back into the way you were before. You dress a certain way, you daven a certain way in shul, maybe you watch an inspirational clip on your phone, and that's all you do, you're fine. Your ruchnis is not the way it's going to be. It was when you were at your height. You think, you act like an Eved Hashem, says Yetzer Hara. You think that you really accomplished something in Eretz Yisrael, you really grew, you really became who you were. And the Yetzer Hara starts to turn to us and say, I'm a Rosh Yeshiva. I'm a teacher. This is what you thought you should have been. And you're not that. You're not keeping up the ways that you plan to grow. And there's no real striving. And there's no real growth. And you know deep on the inside that, come on, you're just faking it. It's not really who you are. Perhaps in the past you had a desire for real Avodas Hashem. You really put in the work to enhance your Emunah and Torah, but it's not happening anymore. And the Yetzer Hara, dressed like a Talmud Chacham, dressed like a mora, dressed like a teacher, comes and says that I have won the day. And it comes and it knocks us down. Because it paints the picture of perfection. And it paints the picture of, well, if you're not this, well then what are you? And what have you accomplished? And he's convinced us that if your learning is not going to be perfect, and the davening is not going to be perfect, and the relationship you're trying to fix is not going to be perfect, then why try at all? Because you're never going to have to look like that. You're never going to look like that Talmud Chacham who's wrestling Yaakov. When Yaakov wrestled the Yetzer Hara, when Yaakov wrestled the Satan, when Yaakov wrestled Saro Shel Esav, says Rabbi Steinsaltz, he was wrestling with the Yetzer Hara of perfection. And one of the most damaging Yetzer Haras we can deal with is the Yetzer Hara of perfection. That if it's not just like this, then what's the point? If the relationship isn't just perfect, then why am I pursuing it? And if my learning is not the way it was when I was this a stage of my life or going over here, then what's the point? I might as well just go back to my phone and watch a movie and call it a day. Because if it's not like this, then what am I trying to do here? The Yetzer Hara of the Talmud Chacham appearing to Yaakov, is so destructive. It is the Yetzer Hara of all or nothing. It's either all like this or it's not worth it at all. Or the Yetzer Hara of perfection. Why should I push myself? Why should I open up a sefer if I'm not going to remember most of it? Why go to the shiur that's a series of 10 weeks. I'm only going to hit, you know, 7 of them. Whatever it's going to be, if it's not going to be perfect, why am I going to do it? If my davening is not going to be just right with all the time I need and from my special sitter and the temperature in the room has to be just so, then what's the point of davening? Because it's not going to be worth it at the end of the day at all. Why improve that relationship if it's not going to be the way I imagine it? There are people in our lives, l'mashal, who frustrate us and disappoint us. There's always going to be people like that. It's the way of the world. And you, maybe, are frustrating and disappointing to other people. It could be. But we're always going to have people in our lives who are frustrating and disappointing. We want them to be a certain way. I want them to view us a certain way. And in our minds, unless that relationship just looks like the way that I pictured it, it's not worth it. So maybe you're best friends with this person, but wouldn't it at least be better, maybe you're not best friends with this person, but wouldn't it be better if you were on speaking terms as opposed to not talking to them at all? So instead we do nothing. It's not worth it because we have dressed like Saro Shel Esav. We have dressed like the Malach of Esav and said, it's either like it's tzaddik and it's perfect or it's not worth it at all. And this is what the Medrash means as well. It says, Vayar Elokim Eskol Asher Asa V'hinei Tov Ma'od. The Medrash says that Hashem saw everything that had been made on the final day, and it was very good. What was Tov Ma'od? Says the Medrash, Tov Ma'od was the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara was Tov Ma'od. I would seem to not think that way. So Rav Steinzahl says the same thing as well. He says, because the Yetzer Hara wants us to think that the only excess is Tov Ma'od. The Yetzer Hara comes to us and says that if it's not Tov Ma'od, then it's not good. It's not worth it. It's not important. It's not valuable. Rabbi Friend, at the Siyum HaShas, in the last cycle, Rabbi Yisachar Friend always speaks at the Siyum HaShas, and he quoted, I think he quoted from Voltaire. He didn't quote, say it was from Voltaire, but he said, quoted from Voltaire, who said that perfection should not be the enemy of the good. And it's a great line, that perfection, or the pursuit of perfection, should not be the enemy of something that's very good. Rabbi Friend was talking about people who start Daf Yomi. There's 2,711 dafim in Shas to finish every 7.5 years. So a person says, well, only learn one masechta. Okay, so you learn one masechta. And what's wrong with that? It was good. So it wasn't perfect. You didn't finish all Shas, but it was still good. And you tried and you pushed. So try, push, try to accomplish, try to do more. Is it going to be perfect? Probably not. But it doesn't mean it's not good. It doesn't mean it's not valuable. It doesn't mean it's not important for you. Even a priceless gem, if you look close enough, is going to have flaws. There's nothing perfect. Only Hashem is perfect. Even the most beautiful diamond is going to have flaws and scratches at some point on some level. If Hashem desires of us to give it our all, then we have to give our all, even with our failings, our problems, and our imperfections. Of course, I don't want to paint the picture that we should not strive for shlemus, that we should not strive for perfection. Of course we should strive to be as good as we can. The Ramchal writes in all of his Sfarim, Mesilas Yesharim, Derech Hashem, Das Sfunos, every work, the Ramchal says, our purpose in this world is to become more perfect, to become more similar to Hashem. That's our purpose here, is to raise our level of perfection and to become as close to Hashem as we can. But you also have to understand that it says in Koheles that Ein Adzam Tzadik Ba'aretz Asher Yasa Tov Lo Yachta. There's no such thing as a person who doesn't fail. Everyone fails. It's how the world works. You're supposed to fail. It's a normal thing. Shlomo Melech writes in Mishlei that a tzaddik falls 7 times and he gets up. And Rav Huttner famously says that you become a tzaddik because you stood up 7 times. That's what made you to a tzaddik. You're going to fail. You're going to mess up. So don't give up on that prize. Try to strive. Try to make yourself better. Try to improve. But perfectionism is a problematic midah. If your whole life is about perfectionism, and it has to be perfect, and if it's not just this, then it's not worth it, then you have an issue, because you refuse to accept any standard short of perfect. And no one's going to be perfect. The person you want to marry is going to be lovely. Is he going to be perfect? No. Should you try to make him as perfect in your mind as you can? Of course, you should try to find all the positive things. But there's always going to be people who are humans, and people are going to try to... There are going to be people who don't fit exactly the box you want them to fit into. And therefore, people that are prone to perfectionist thinking don't accept failings on the road to achieving their goals. And their fear of it not being perfect leads to a greater stress. And perfectionists can't move beyond any shortcomings and begin to view themselves as the whole enter. They begin to view their entire self as a failure because this wasn't perfect in the way I viewed the situation. Therefore, not only is it not perfect, but I am a failure because it didn't match my view of what I want it to be. In a sense, a perfectionist sets themselves up for failure because achieving the expected lofty accomplishment is impossible. And therefore, you've already set yourself up for failure because you painted in your mind a picture of something that's not going to happen. And therefore, you're already going to be miserable even before you start. What's a healthy attitude? It's not perfectionism. It's being an optimalist. To be as optimal as possible. To do the best you can. To understand that I'm going to push. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to grow. And I'm going to do the best that I'm capable of doing. That's a healthy attitude towards failure. That all humans make mistakes. And making mistakes are good. And they're okay. And it's not always going to be the way you want. A success that was arrived at after many setbacks, and a person who tried to learn something, tried to improve their davening, tried to make a relationship, and then after a long time, you got to that place where it was better, that's a real success. You went up, you went down, you tried, you got off the horse, you got on the horse, you tried again, 8 or 9 or 10 times until you got there, that's a real feeling of success. We're not going to go into it right now, but I would highly recommend The Letters of the Stifler Gaon. The Letters of the Stifler Gaon on psychology and dealing with failures and stresses were collected by a therapist in Muncie, Rabbi Yaakov Greenwald. They were originally published in two volumes called Etzos v'Hadrachos. They were letters by the psychologist to the stifler in Eretz Yisrael about how to deal with people who had failures, people who were struggling with depression, and all different types of issues that were coming up in their lives. The stifler, even though he sat in this house in Bnei Brak, learning Torah all day, was a tremendous pikeach. He had tremendous insight into human personality, and recently those letters have been translated into English, into a beautiful volume from Rabbi Greenwald, and there he lays out all these beautiful explanations about how to cope with failure and understanding and perfectionism. The stifler deals with them in a beautiful way. So I would say, Ayin Sham, go look there, in those letters of the stifler to talk more about this topic in particular. And when we fall short of any undertaking, we have to acknowledge we made a mistake, and we have to continue on that goal moving forward. There is no decision that we can make in this world that doesn't have imperfections and can't be doubted until the end of the time. Every single thing you do, you could doubt, you could question, and is this person good enough, and is this the right person, and is this the right project for me, and is this the right job, and is this the right relationship, and is this the right place for me to live, and is this a good apartment? You could do it, la'olam va'ed, and you're going to make yourself nuts, and you're going to be wrestled to the ground, and the Saro Shal'esav, the angel of Esav, is going to have his foot on your neck, and you're going to choke out, because you're not going to accomplish anything. If you're constantly worried about wrestling with perfection, and it's not just so, and you're going to lose out on so many beautiful things in life because you're unable to get up, wipe yourself off, and move forward and to try again and to try a different perspective and a different way to accomplish. The more we wallow in imperfections and doubts to scare us off and to keep us in our head, the more we're blocking ourselves from experiencing all the meaning and all the beauty and all the lovely things that we have in the world in front of us. So we have to learn how to hold those imperfections, how to hold those doubts, and over time, embrace them and say, okay, I'm trying. I'm not saying that I'm not going to sit back and do nothing. Okay, there are imperfections, there are doubts that I have. I'll try to work with them. I'll try to overcome them. I'll try to shine them and smooth them out the best that I can, to the best of my ability. But I'm not going to say this is all of who I am. And if it's not perfect, then it's not worth trying. There's much more meaning to life because of all those imperfections and because of all those doubts. It's a much more accomplished life and a much greater feeling that I have things that I'm working on, I'm developing, and I'm trying to push forward in my own avoda as well. I just want to share with you a very, very insightful short essay that I read in The Atlantic last year. The Atlantic is a monthly magazine. So it's a political magazine, and it's definitely a left-leaning magazine with political views, but it has really good writing. So the end of the last essay in The Atlantic every month is written by a gentleman named James Parker. He has the last page, and he writes a short essay about different things. So in the April 2020 edition of The Atlantic, he's talking about something that's actually relevant to current events, soccer. Right now, the World Cup, I think, is still going on. And in professional soccer, there's something called VAR. VAR is Video Assistant Referee. It's essentially, there's a camera watching the whole game, And some person sitting in a booth could be on the other side of the world with a high digital camera, is watching to make sure that everything is just exact, and that in soccer, I don't know the rules of soccer that well at all, but you can't be offsides in soccer. And if a person's behind the ball or front of the ball, the whole thing gets called, and a goal is not a goal, and it stops the whole game. So you have two referees or three referees on the field. How can each referee see where every single player is, all 11 players at the same time? It's a bit half-crap there. So you have to know where is each person on the field to make sure somebody's not offsides on the wrong side when someone's, you know, shooting a goal. So they instituted VAR, where this camera and these guys sitting in a booth are monitoring every single thing to make sure it's exact and nobody's doing anything offsides. So listen, and we find it not just in soccer, but it's in basketball and other sports as well, where they have a computer come in, or in baseball, a computerized umpire come in to be exact, to make sure every single thing is perfect down to the microscopic level of following the rules exactly. So this is what he writes. He says, I think about all the layers of finicking supervision and overweening scrutiny to which we subject ourselves, the preposterous standards, the insensate judgments, the malign fantasy of perfectibility that has overtaken even our moments of play. It's soccer, he says. And we can't even have a game of soccer without you were 2 inches off. It can't be. And we need to have a computer come and dictate us how to play soccer. And it's a fantasy. The VAR world, with its obscure vectors and subatomic infringements, it is just not what soccer is. It is not what reality is, says James Parker. Now later, Jacob, in preparation for the encounter with Esav, he divides his family and his property into two camps. Why? Because if Esav will come to one camp, the other one will escape if the other one is destroyed. So Rav Nassan, the Talmud of Nachman of Breslov, so he writes in Likutei Halachos, in Orach Chaim, and he explains that Yaakov sets here a rule for all generations, that not every time will be able to excel at every single challenge. Sometimes, in certain tasks, we may have to make a sacrifice, that it might not work out the way we plan. And therefore, we have to understand, says Rav Nassan, and to internalize that the fact that a little is good too. A little is good, and doing our best is also good and acceptable. And that even a partial achievement is an achievement. And that Yaakov didn't despair and say, well, if I can't have all of my family and everything will be the way I want it to be, well, then what's the point? I might as well just hand myself over to Esav and do whatever he wants. He tried to divide, to disperse, risk, and try to save at least a part of what he had. So Rav Nassan describes a person who wants to learn to daven and behave towards others perfectly, but can't do so. So what's his advice? Not to stop chas v'shalom and to try to, but rather to try to succeed partially, to try to snatch something small, to chop a little bit. You have a day where you're very busy at work and very busy at school, and you can't daven as long or as much as you wanted to, and you couldn't listen to a shir or learn from a sefer hava chavrusa, and you couldn't do everything, so chop what you can. You have to have what sometimes we call a lichatchila plan B. Okay, there's going to be times where it's not going to be the perfect day, but do I have something in my back pocket? Something to learn, something to look at, something to inspire me where I'm going to have a backup that day. And I'll use my kochos in a different way. Not to say, oh, whatever, I'm now going to go lichatchila plan B for the rest of my life. No, we always strive to do our best. But we have to be okay on those days where it's not going to be perfect. You don't have all the time you want to learn and do everything you want to accomplish. To have those things in your back pocket and say, today I have my lichatchila plan B backup. I'm going to learn that. I'm going to dive in this way, do this, and have my own avoda in that particular area. Getting to a shir late, only from time to time, is better than never showing up, or for the perfect conditions. Now, in our technological, fast-paced generation, it is especially suitable. Even if you don't have all the time in the world, there are so many things we can hop on our phones, things we can accomplish in a quick way to learn a little bit over here, to daven over here, and to access those things when things are not perfect. I'm going to go back to James Parker's essay just for a moment. He says, so here's to being fallible, to honoring the possibilities of the ever-running moment by accepting that some of those possibilities are wrong. We live our lives in negotiation with entropy. Do we not? A tolerance for error is a must, not for injustice, not for corruption, but for the honest mistake made in real time. It's a universal condition. It's the universal condition. You don't hit pause and summon the immaculate arbitrators. You don't wait for the screen to tell you what happened. You don't stop the game until the game is over. You don't stop pushing and trying and doing what you can until our time in this earth is done. As long as the game is going on, you keep on playing, you keep on engaging, and you keep on doing the best you can. So we should not fall prey to the Saro Shel Esav or the video assistant referee, the Yitzhahara of perfection. We should continue to do our best, the best we can, to continue to push without giving up on our relationships, our Torah and our Avodah. The Tana de Bel Yo writes, Shekol Echad ve'echad mi Yisrael, Chayav Lomar, Masa Yagiyu Masei Lemaisa Avosai Aron Yisrael Yaakov. Every Jew is responsible to say, when will my actions reach the level of my forefathers, Avram, of Yitzchak, and of Yaakov? We have to aspire to the levels of the Avos and work on ourselves to attain those levels. But as much as we want that path between where we are spiritually holding today, we want it to be a straight line to where we want to be. We have to understand it's not going to be that way. It's not a straight line from here to that goal of who I want to be. There's going to be ups and downs and different things that come in the way as well. But as long as we keep the goals of spiritual perfection in view, and I have a picture of what I want to be and how I can get there, and I'm going to try my best to get there, and I strive, then we'll always be on the right track. Okay? We'll stop here.